Welcome to the program for Friday, March 30th, 2012 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Friday at 3 is always the Federal News Countdown. This week is no exception, and my experts on the world of the federal government today choosing the three most important news stories of the week are John Desenberg of the Performance Institute. Good to see you, my friend. Thanks for coming in.
Great to see you.
And my other expert this week is Dan Blair. He is the head of NAPA, the National Academy of
Public Administrators.
I always get that wrong because I'm thinking of the stupid NAPA auto parts theme in my head whenever I say
NAPA.
We'll change
your name for you, Francis.
Well, what I need to do is actually just buckle down and learn it. But it's great to see you as always, Dan.
Thanks, Francis, for being on the program today. Good to see you gentlemen here today.
The Federal News Countdown includes the three most important federal news stories of the week, as you both have chosen them. And we start, as we always do, with
number three.
The third most important federal news story of the week from John Desenberg is from the Federal Times. The headline is Senators to Grill Agencies Over Insourcing and Outsourcing Practices. And this is something, John, that's been going on for, a decade or longer?
Longer.
This conversation over insourcing and outsourcing and A76s and on and on and on.
Right. And I guess we should change it from the future tense to the past tense. This hearing took place, and Senator McCaskill led this hearing. And I always think it's important to remind people, Senator McCaskill was a former auditor herself, and she's very uniquely qualified in the Senate on these issues. And I find what she does always very interesting and unusually good because she's the only one paying attention to some of these issues. And I really just wanted to bring this out because, as you said, it never goes away. And the reason it never seems to go away is because it's become intensely politicized. This is a business issue. And at the Performance Institute, we've tracked this for many years. And when I was a federal employee, I was a part of this in the Bush administration looking at this. And instead of understanding the business of what is core to our function and what is not core to our function, what is inherent to our mission, what is not inherent to our mission, where can we really get the most bang for our buck given our talent? I mean, all of these questions that we should be asking, instead, this gets kicked back and forth like a political football. And, you know, if times were flush, this might not be a big issue. But we have some very serious fiscal issues here. And that means we need to address this as a business issue.
Mm-hmm.
Once and for all, I don't know quite how to depoliticize it, but it certainly needs to be. And just to give you a real quick example, Francis, I was recently working with an agency, and they said to me, you know, our IT professionals here, and they're basically project managers because the government can't keep people up to date in IT skills. It would be impossible. We just can't send people to that level of training, Cold Fusion or .NET or whatever it is, you know, the programming language of the day.
Yep.
That's an obvious example of somewhere where the government needs to think about outsourcing. There are other cases where they need to think about insourcing, but let's make this a business decision once and for all instead of the political hot potato that it has been for 20 years.
We're going to talk about this later. This afternoon with Stan Soloway from the Professional Services Council and Roger Waldron from the Coalition for Government Procurement. We've reached out to some of the other organizations that submitted testimony to this hearing. So this is something we're going to dig into over the course of the next couple of days on In Depth with Francis Rose. John Desenberg's third most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times, and the headline, Senators to Grill Agencies Over Insourcing and Outsourcing Practices. Dan, your third most important federal news story of the week. This is quintessentially why I love to have you on the Countdown Show, because you always add something to the mix that I never saw coming. I want you to explain to me why a story about the Mega Millions lottery is the third most important federal news story of the week in your mind.
Well, you know, Francis, maybe this should have been the first most important story. It's all over the news. It was the lead story on the news shows this morning, on the Today Show. And when we talk about the fiscal problems that the federal government is having, pay freezes, benefit cuts, look at this. Now, John and I were talking out here before the show. It's up to $600 million in jackpot. This could be the source of our solutions right here is to have a government-run lottery system.
Frankly, it
is a government-run lottery system because the states benefit from this. But I think what's interesting about that is that if we were having a headline that, you know, that we were raising taxes by $500 million or that something was going to be cut by $500 million. It gets into such a food fight. But this is something where people are investing a dollar at a time. And I find it very interesting that there'd be so much money thrown into this lottery. What are the odds of winning one and now probably $200 million? But people are still going out and investing their dollars or $5 and $10, their office pools. And so I think it kind of gives a perspective out there of what people are doing with their money. And also the optimism and sheer hope that someone has is that they're going to walk in and they're going to find themselves a half a billionaire someday. So I thought this was a really interesting story. I'd like to know how many feds today took off at lunchtime and went to their local lottery store, you know, to the pharmacy across the street or whoever is selling the lottery ticket and purchased 5, 10. How many office pools are out there? This is certainly consuming the country, and I just found it a very interesting story. And I thought if you put in perspective with what we talked about in terms of cuts, to compare the numbers, and it just stands out to me, and that's why I picked that.
There's a couple of locations that I'm thinking of that probably had a bunch of feds lined up to buy these today. There's a little store named Kogod's right off Capitol Hill, right behind the Hall of the States building that a lot of the TV studios are located in. I bet you they had a line, and the outlet at Union Station. There's a liquor store there that at least they used to have a lottery station there. I bet you they were loaded up, too. My colleague Sean McCauley has put in our packet here some fun facts that he's confirmed about the history of the lottery. An English lottery authorized by King James I in 1612 granted the Virginia Company of London the right to raise money to help establish settlers in the first permanent English colony in Jamestown, Virginia. So part of the reason even here in the first place is because of a lottery. As Johnny Carson would say, I did not know that.
Well, and as they always say, you can't win if you don't play.
Yeah, and I don't play.
And I don't either.
We have a pool. Well, really?
But John has his ticket. He has his commemorative ticket.
Desenberg is the only one in the studio that's playing. So at least as far as the show is concerned, you have a 3-3 chance.
We have a winner
right here. This is the winning ticket, by the way. You've seen it here first.
Really? Could I see that for a minute? Dan Blair's third most important story of the week on the Federal News Countdown is from the Washington Post, about the now $600 million jackpot in the Mega Millions lottery. You can read all the stories that we're talking about in the Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Coming up on In Depth with Francis Rose, John Desenberg's second most important federal news story of the week. Same thing from Dan Blair when the Federal News Countdown continues. Elaine Cummings, Chief Information Sharing Officer at the FBI, on the Federal Executive Forum on Secure Information and Intelligence Sharing, sponsored by the AFSEA Homeland Security Conference.
I hope that the vision would be a time coming in the future in which information sharing is just routine, it's quick, it's seamless, it's easy, it's inexpensive. It's just a normal part of our lives.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Join AFSEA for the first of its TechNet Land Forces conference series. Recently evolved from the annual Land War Net conference, these events will provide a forum for all services to discuss operational issues. The Southwest Conference, being held March 27th through 29th in Tucson, will focus on training tomorrow's cyber warriors, mobile communications on the battlefield, and defending the cyberspace. Register to attend or exhibit at www.technetlandforces.org. That's technetlandforces.org. Meeting Mission Goals Through Health, brought to you by General Dynamics IT.
The Department of Health and Human Services wants to use Twitter to stay ahead of health issues. The department is sponsoring a contest hoping to get developers to create web applications that can spot emerging signs of health problems in communities in real time. HHS says in the past, social media has provided some of the first clues to disease outbreaks, but public health officials so far haven't been able to spot those trends until after the fact. The winner of the real-time web app contest will get $21,000.
General Dynamics IT is meeting the challenges of a complex healthcare environment that requires far-reaching experience and full-spectrum capabilities. Government, military, and commercial health payer organizations rely on General Dynamics IT's health services, solutions, and support to tackle their toughest issues. General Dynamics IT's broad understanding of healthcare data, military health missions, fraud, waste, and abuse protection, and more ensures support and innovation tailored to your real-world needs. Today's healthcare challenges are formidable. To learn more, go to GDIT.com.
Here on the Navy men's lacrosse team, Friday night, March 30th against Lehigh at 7 p.m. at Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium in Annapolis. Tickets are just $10 for adults and $5 for students 18 and under. Come back on Saturday the 31st to see Navy women's lacrosse versus Holy Cross at noon with free admission to Navy Marine Corps Memorial Stadium. It's Navy men's lacrosse versus Lehigh on Friday, March 30th at 7 p.m. and Navy women's lacrosse against Holy Cross the following day at noon. Get your tickets today. Call 800-US-4-NAVY or visit NavySports.com.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON.
Tired of playing catch-up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Hear from the top of the food chain on how your agency is using technology today. Tech Tuesday, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week includes the three most important federal news stories of the week, as chosen by John Desenberg of the Performance Institute and Dan Blair of Napa. And we're up to
number two.
The second most important federal news story of the week is chosen by Dan Blair's from the Federal Times. The headline is, expert says USPS pullout would jeopardize federal health insurance program. Earlier this week on the program, we had a highlight of this hearing where Walt Francis essentially said, if the Postal Service people come out of the FEHBP, that's it for the FEHBP as far as it being affordable. What do you see when you look at this whole discussion? You have a couple of unique perspectives here, being a former member of the Postal Rate Commission, so you've been up close and personal on the Postal Service, and high up at OPM looking at this from the overall personnel realm, too.
Well, my perspective on this is looking at what's the mission of the two agencies involved. And one of the core missions of the Office of Personnel Management is to provide health care benefits for federal retirees, their families, and current employees and their families. They do a very good job. Is the program perfect? No program is perfect. But I would put the way that OPM runs the Federal Employee Health Benefit Program up against any other employer-sponsored plan out there. I think they do a very good job. And what's the job of the U.S. Postal Service? It's to deliver mail on a universal service basis. And they do a very good job. You can hear about their financial woes, et cetera. But the bottom line is they do a very good job.
Yes.
But it's not part of their core mission to get into the insurance business. And I struggle with this because I think that we need to do everything we can to keep mail affordable, to make sure that the Postal Service remains viable. But I haven't seen the evidence yet that this was part of their wheelhouse. They have some good consultants on board. They mentioned the Hay Group and others, but I don't know where they're going. I don't know how they can save money unless they cut employee benefits by pulling out of the FEHBP. And the flip side of that is, what does that do to the FEHBP? I'm not sure I agree with the dire prediction of Walt Francis, and Walt's really good. I think the FAHPP would remain viable. It would still probably be the largest employer-sponsored health care plan out there. But undoubtedly, it would have a major impact. And there are a lot of questions to remain. What's going to happen with postal retirees?
Mm-hmm.
What about people who have part, you know, for instance, I spent 20-some-odd years on the Hill and then 5 years at OPM. But I have almost 5 years in at the Postal Regulatory Commission.
Mm-hmm.
And I retired from the commission in 2011. Where do I fit into this?
Yeah.
There are going to be a lot of people like me. They have postal service and regular federal civil service. How do you divvy that up? And who's going to take care of us? You know, as we get older, we're a more expensive group.
Mm-hmm.
And what risk plan? And does that go with the feds or with the Postal Service? There are a lot of devils in these details that need to be worked out. And I think at the end of the day, I don't see how the Postal Service can save money over what OPM does for it unless they dramatically curtail benefits. And the question is, would they keep retirees on as well?
Mm-hmm. John, as I listened to this hearing earlier in the week, I went the same place that Dan did, which is, what business is a particular organization supposed to be in? I remember, think back to when General Motors was having the problems that they were having, and one of the comments by the CEO at the time, the person that took over before Fritz Henderson came in there, he said, we're a healthcare company that makes cars. Obviously, speaking to the fact that our mission is twisted around here on how we're having to spend our money and what it's costing us. It seems like they're trying to go to where GM was when they were unsuccessful. Is there something there that you think I'm seeing the wrong way?
Well, you know, you're seeing this right. I think one particular thing in light of what's going on this week, probably the biggest news story, you know, of the week is what's happening at the Supreme Court on health insurance as well. And of course, what they're arguing about there is, should everyone be compelled to join? And the reason the administration wants everyone to be compelled to join is so that the pool of healthy people and the pool of people in general is large enough to make insurance viable. That is the nature of insurance.
Mm-hmm.
The government should be looking at this program, FEHBP, from a government-wide perspective, which is the only way to keep these kind of programs viable is to have a very large pool of insured people. And as soon as you start pulling people out, the whole thing, it becomes questionable. So I think the parallels between this and what's happening at the Supreme Court are very interesting.
Do you see that parallel too, Dan?
Well, I still think if the Postal Service pulls out, the FEHBP remains viable. But what's interesting is no employee is mandated to join the FEHBP, and that seemed to be one of the key points of contention before the court was that was the mandate that you purchase insurance. And so I'm not sure. It's interesting to compare the two. As far as an employer-sponsored plan, I think the FEHBP has run well, and I think it can continue to run well. The question is if the Postal Service pulls out, will they actually save the money that they predict? One interesting aspect to look at is that the Postal Service actually bargains with its unions over the employer contribution to the FEHBP.
Mm-hmm.
On average, the federal government pays about 72% for regular federal employees and retirees, but the Postal Service pays about 80% because they bargain it.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can't pay the same level that the federal government pays, i.e. they pay more,
right?
What leads us to believe that they're going to, and they have to pay more money for that, what leads us to believe that they're going to save money by pulling out? So these are public policy questions. I think that Congress has a lot to do and a lot of investigation to do before they would allow this to happen.
Walt Francis says and is quoted in this story by Steve Losey in the Fed Times, just to break even, the Postal Service will have to reduce benefits or increase premiums by about one-tenth. The costs of a pullout to the Postal Service will exceed $1 billion annually just to maintain current levels of benefits and premiums. And over time, as the postal workforce ages further, the costs will rise sharply. The only saving grace in this, it seems, is that the Postal Service won't have to prepay the what they're having to prepay now, and that's where the Postmaster General, Patrick Donahoe, says that this will they'll wind up coming out ahead long term. But that's pension. That's not insurance.
They're prepaying their retiree health care benefits.
Okay.
It was identified they had about $70 billion in an unfunded liability that when you're a postal employee, you accrue benefits for today. They pay for your insurance today. But you also accrue benefits in the future for your retirees. And unlike most private sector companies, the Postal Service and the federal government keep retirees on the rolls as far as health care goes.
Mm-hmm.
But in doing that, you start accruing liabilities in the future. The Postal Service was paying that down,
mm-hmm.
and they couldn't afford to pay it down at the aggressive rate that they're paying it today. And that's been part of the debate with postal reform is how do we address those unfunded liabilities, but we do so in a manner that the Postal Service can afford. In 2006, they could have afforded it. In 2010, with the drop in mail, with the economy and other factors, and doesn't look like that mail's coming back, it needs to be restructured.
Mm-hmm. When you look at the restructuring, what do you see? Do you see spaces that maybe we haven't heard about yet that we might be hearing about in the future, Dan?
Well, as far as FEHBP goes, if they can bring that down, they've already pre-funded, I think, $35, $40 billion. And so that's a significant amount. But they're also trying to – the Postal Service is also trying to address its what Donahoe said they would be in bankruptcy if they were a private sector organization. They're also trying to address their other costs. They're trying to reduce from days of delivery from 6 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to close retail facilities. They're also trying to realign their network. They're getting a lot of political pushback on that.
Yeah, they certainly are.
So it's certainly going to be an interesting season. At what point the Postal Service runs out of money, we are hearing maybe it could be the fall. We keep on hearing that, but it looks like there's going to be a judgment day coming on as sooner rather than later.
Dan Blair's second most important federal news story of the week is from the Federal Times. The headline is, expert says USPS pullout would jeopardize federal health insurance program. It's posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, so you can read it whenever you want. John Desenberg's second most important federal news story of the week when the Federal News Countdown continues.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
It's about smiles. It's about laughter. It's about going out and making a difference in the life of a child. You don't have to get mad. You just have to go mad. GoMad2011.com is a website dedicated to supporting the Make-A-Wish Foundation. At GoMad, our mission is simple, to go out and make a difference. So how can you help? Visit the Wish Wall on GoMad2011.com and make a contribution today. Or find out how you can donate with a simple text message. Do it now so that we can continue to touch the lives of children with life-threatening conditions by granting their wishes.
Powered by the latest second-generation Intel Xeon processors, new HP ProLiant G7 servers are a perfect high-speed solution for lowering costs, improving utilization, and reducing server sprawl. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how together they can power your data center into the future. Talk to GovConnection's experienced federal sales team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
And tonight's number one star of the game from your Washington Capitals, number 83, J.B. Hall.
Hi, this is Jay Beagle of the Washington Capitals.
Here comes Jay Beagle, a champ. Jay Beagle into the empty net with a goaltender pulled. The Capitals lead it 4-1.
And you're listening to Federal News Radio 1500 AM, the home of the Caps.
Closed in on smoking. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Lighting up has never seemed so uncool. Data shows that fewer and fewer middle and high school students are exposed to smoke on the road, but one in every five non-smoking youths is still exposed to secondhand smoke in the car. Dr. Brian King is with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
There's a variety of adverse health effects that are particularly associated with exposure, from acute respiratory infections to delayed lung growth, more severe asthma, as well as even in infants, sudden infant death syndrome.
New policies, new social norms, and new rules on smoking have helped to lower the number of those who smoke.
Parents can simply implement smoke-free policies in their homes and vehicles and not allow it, and not a smoke around their children.
The study is in the journal Pediatrics. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
How do law enforcement agencies find the witness in the crowd, foil threats to national security, and promote safety? Join senior leaders from DHS, DOJ, the FBI, CBP, and DOI at AFSEA Bethesda's Law Enforcement IT Day, April 18th at the Bethesda North Marriott, as they discuss how technology will advance the mission. AFSEA Bethesda thanks premier sponsors Accenture, CSC, DRC, General Dynamics, InfoZen, L3 Stratus, Lockheed Martin, and SAIC. Register at AFSEABethesda.org/LE. IT Day.
FederalNewsRadio.com, your one-stop shop for all things federal. Listen daily to interviews with federal managers and government contractors. Read Mike Causey's daily federal report, or just stop by for an update on the latest news affecting the federal community. FederalNewsRadio.com, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. This week, the three most important federal news stories of the week, selected by John Desenberg of the Performance Institute and Dan Blair of NAPA. And John Desenberg, your second most important federal news story of the week, is my colleague Mike O'Connell's story on federalnewsradio.com. The headline is, analysis says lots of budget talk, no action until lame duck. Mike Lillis, reporter for the Hill newspaper on the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Emily Kopp this week. And he's echoing what we're hearing and what you're probably hearing about what's going on Capitol Hill, which is, here we go again, continuing resolution, budget uncertainty, maybe last-minute brinksmanship over government shutdown as late as December of this year.
Well, you know, and I didn't want this story to be for federal employees. Every federal employee knows the crisis that we face in this country with the way we handle the federal budget. This is not news for anyone who is involved with the government, but for the public at large, I do not think there is any kind of recognition about the problems that this leads to for all of us as taxpayers and citizens, and it needs to get more attention and more exposure. Again, something that is inherently not political, shouldn't be political, has become very political. And let me just talk a little bit about what this is doing to all of us. Programs throughout the government are unable to begin to do what they want to do, what they need to do, in most cases until April, May, June of the year, and then the fiscal year ends at September 30th. So we're trying to now compress a year's worth of work and initiatives and strategies into a six-month or a five-month period where the rest of the year is really a tremendous, gigantic holding pattern and a tremendous waste of time and energy. This is serious business where we're frittering away half of the year here in this country, unable to get going with the work of the people, with what needs to be done because of these political games and gamesmanship. It's become not just a joke. It's become tragic, and I think it's on its way to becoming a fatal problem for this country. We don't have the time to do what we need to do when we can enact budgets. We don't care. I don't care personally whether it's the Republican budget, the Democratic budget, but people have to be given direction and have to be given the go-forward signal that they can move out on what they need to do for the year ahead. We can't go forward as a country until we get a handle on this. It's tragic. And the other thing that I think shocks my colleagues when I'm talking to people both from other countries and from state and local governments around this country, that we are somehow permanently wedded to a one-year budget. Whereas governments around the world have increasingly gone to a two-year budget for this very reason. This kind of work and heavy lifting We just can't afford to do this around the clock, year in and year out. We need to move on to other issues, which means we need a two-year budget so people can actually get something done before we launch back into this. It never ends, and it's deja vu all over again, as you say. So this is something that's gone from a hindrance to, at this point, a really critical, maybe the most critical problem in government.
Dan, I was reading the transcript of a speech that Leon Panetta gave, and of course he's now the Secretary of Defense, former OMB director, former House Budget Committee chairman, so he knows this stuff inside and out. And he was reminiscing about the good old days in D.C., and he made a reference to Mike Mansfield and Everett Dirksen having coffee together every morning and playing golf together, and the collegiality and the atmosphere under which that work got done in those times. And it got me to thinking, politically, it was a totally different time because the two parties weren't competitive in Washington at the time. The Democratic Party dominated Congress for a long period of time, and so there was more incentive in that kind of a structure to be collegial and to compromise because it was really the only potential outlet. Now with the flip-flop in control over the last decade or so, there's less incentive to do that, I believe. Do you think that structure is part of the cause of part of the problem here?
Well, if you look at the whole budget structure, when was the last time we actually followed the budget process? I probably had hair and it was brown. And, you know, we haven't followed this for at least a decade. And you have to look back and go, what's the purpose of it? And one of the things that when you and John were talking about earlier, you know, a biennial budget, that was something when I was the senior counsel for Fred Thompson on the Senate Governmental Affairs Committee, and that was one of his key legislative proposals, along with then-Senator Pete Domenici. And we got that legislation reported out of the committee. But again, it ran into a lot of roadblocks. Appropriators didn't like it because it took power away from the Appropriations Committee. But it's a good – I think Leon Panetta may have actually supported that when he was the OMB director at during the Clinton administration. But getting back to the partisan gridlock – I think, you know, two things have added to this partisan gridlock. Now we are, each party, we have parity between the two parties. It's like 50.0001 versus 49.9999.
Yep.
And the incentives for bipartisanship are viewed as giving the other side a strategic advantage to take over. And we've seen that. I mean, we've actually seen what the founding fathers expected with the House of Representatives to kind of flip back and forth. What's ironic is then we also hear about how gerrymandered congressional districts are.
Mm-hmm.
But these gerrymandered districts seem to have produced a Congress that is heavily divided, but it seems that the power flips back and forth. It was 94, 2006, 2010, what's going to happen in 2012. But it's one of the things that really does stop good governance is this failure to work across party lines. A couple weeks ago on the 14th of March, the Academy hosted an event entitled the Elliot Richardson Prize Award. Elliot Richardson served in four cabinet-level positions as Attorney General, Secretary of Commerce, the old Health, Education, and Welfare, and Secretary of Defense, I believe. He's the only cabinet official to serve in four as the head of four cabinet departments. And we honor him every other year by giving an award to an individual who's contributed outstanding for their outstanding contributions in public service. This year we do it, Robert Gates. And it was an incredible night in which we heard an unfiltered Robert Gates talking about his appointment, talking about his work in the Bush administration, the Obama administration. But one of the things he brought about is you don't have the statesman like you did a few years back.
Mm-hmm.
And that hurts our country. And the failure to work across party lines, part of it is the gerrymandering. You know, you don't have a Connie Morella anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Some people thought, you know, would wring their hands and go, well, Connie never voted with Republicans, but she voted her conscience and she voted her district.
Mm-hmm.
And you need people like that. Now you have really strict partisans on both sides. And I'm not sure that that's good for the country.
Any way around that, John, or is this just the way the political process ebbs and flows? And is there a possibility that we'll get back to, as trends change and as times change, that we might get back to a more productive, cohesive environment?
Well, you know, at the Performance Institute, we're working with the appropriators in Congress to look at budgets from an outcome-based perspective. In other words, what are we getting for our money? What do you want to get from this money? What are we getting from our money? And this leads to all other discussions such as why do we have so many duplicative programs? Why are there so many redundancies? Well, because the appropriators and others create programs constantly for no apparent reason. So one of the things that we really hope to have happen, and we're going to be talking about this with Federal News Radio at the Government Performance Summit in June, is linking budgets to performance. In other words, when you set a budget, you also set expectations for what will come of that money. And then you measure to see if you do get those results. I mean, we've got to go again, and it relates back to my first story. This is a managerial and a business issue in many ways. And, you know, this country, I don't think we can afford to go down these purely political avenues anymore. And I know NAPA, this is what you do, is let's bring some real public administration skill sets to these issues.
The second most important federal news story of the week from John Desenberg is federalnewsradio.com story. Headlined, lots of budget talk, no action until lame duck. And you can read it linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news stories of the week from John Desenberg and Dan Blair on the Federal News Countdown next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Attention civilian employees of the intelligence community and the Departments of Defense and State. You could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com/term life. That's GEBA.com/term life. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
When lives are at stake, you need technology you can count on. FLIR Systems' legacy of life-saving thermal imaging sensors continues through their offering of full-spectrum chemical, biological, radiation, and explosive threat detection systems and beyond-the-fence perimeter security solutions. Visit FLIR.com to learn more. FLIR Systems, because it's not just your job, it's your life.
Federal pay and benefits are taking center stage in the 2013 budget debate. President Obama has proposed a 0.5% pay increase for feds, while Republicans are calling for a federal pay freeze through 2015. Republicans also support a 10% cut to the size of the federal workforce, while both plans promote an increase in feds' contributions to their retirement accounts. FederalNewsRadio.com is your home for all of the latest budget news. Visit FederalNewsRadio.com, search term budget.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DOD reporter, Jared Serbin. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DOD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DOD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and FederalNewsRadio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown this week features the three most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by Dan Blair of NAPA and John Desenberg of the Performance Institute. And we're up to
number one.
The most important federal news story of the week is chosen by John Desenberg from The Washington Post. The headline is Homeland Security's morale is at code red. This is Joe Davidson's story from The Post. And this is not good. The Homeland Security Department has struggled throughout the years that it's existed on the Partnership for Public Services Best Places to Work survey. This is a follow-up on that and the House Homeland Security Committee looking at this. morale at agencies is a really shaky topic to try to cover, John. Why is that? Why does this make people so queasy?
Well, you know what? I literally almost fell out of my seat when I got this as a tweet. By the way, you know, in today's modern age, this came across my Twitter feed, and I literally almost fell out of my seat because when was the last time we had a congressional hearing on employee morale at a particular agency? Dan may have an answer to that, but to me, this really sends a message that this isn't just a dirty little secret anymore. This is an open issue, and it has a direct impact on mission success and mission accomplishment. What I thought was very interesting from this hearing was a former Coast Guard Commander Thad Allen, who's very respected everywhere, had a great quote, and I just think he is one of our strongest leaders. He said that, you know, the mission of an agency is not employee morale. But the mission of an agency, if executed well with strong leadership, has a direct correlation to employee morale. And I think that's what's so scary about this. It's not that employee morale is low, because if this was Acme, you know, gas station or something, who cares if employee morale is low, right? Mm-hmm. As long as I can get my gas.
Right.
But this is not some store. This is the Department of Homeland Security. And what it says is that these employees are not sure that the mission is being executed the way it should be. And what this says is we do not have faith in leadership that they are doing the right thing. And, you know, there's a very good quote that all HR professionals know, which is that people join an organization for its mission and they leave an organization because of their boss.
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't agree with that quote more. And what it's telling you is these dedicated people, and, you know, 99.9% are dedicated. They're here for a reason.
Yeah.
They don't feel their leadership is serving the country. They're basically screaming out that something is wrong.
You were elbow deep in this stuff at OPM, morale issues and retention issues and those kinds of things, Dan. When you see a story like this, what do you think?
Well, I think it shows that, I mean, DHS has struggled from day one, putting together these disparate agencies, offices, components together into a singular source dedicated to protecting the homeland. And I think what would be interesting, and I don't know if the Partnership for Public Services data showed this, but if you would look at an employee of FEMA today, would they identify themselves as a DHS employee or a FEMA employee? And I think that we have to do a better job at integrating these employees into a singular department.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and this isn't good news, but if you look at the Department of Defense as an example of how long it took that to become an integrated department, some would say it took, you know, two generations. That when you brought the Army and the Navy together and the Department, the War Department, and you made this Department of Defense, it struggled for a long time because it each saw it as its own component. It's mm-hmm. going to take very, very strong leadership working with the Chief Human Capital Officer of the department and with the component agencies in order to integrate this better and to bring the employee morale up.
Can you get that kind of strong leadership in an environment where the very top-level people in an organization change generally every 18 to 36 months? Either one of you.
Well, I mean, I'll just jump in on that. That's the case in every agency, and in some agencies we have pretty high employee engagement. Look at what's happened at places like Nuclear Regulatory Commission or FDIC, where they do have what it tells you there is we believe we are solving the nation's problems and we have strong leadership, skilled leadership in place that's taking us where we need to go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as someone who has a little bit of insight into DHS and sees some of the memorandums and policies and different programs and projects, it really, when you're an employee there, it feels like you are just dodging things that are coming at you from all angles. Headquarters wants you to do this, but your undersecretary wants you to do that. And by the way, you know, you may be conflicting with a different part of DHS. So mm-hmm. It is a very strong sense of chaos over there. And one thing I don't think happened at DOD that I still see at DHS, some people are continuing to keep alive functions, redundant functions, because there's a feeling that maybe one day we'll be set free and we can go back to becoming Coast Guard by ourselves
or FEMA
by ourselves. They'll realize that this was a big mistake. So let's keep all of our support functions here for that day where we will be set free. Honest to goodness, that is happening over there.
Well, I think you've seen that. I think there's been legislation introduced over the years to break out one component or another. So that does feed into that type of belief that, well, We don't have to integrate because at some point we're going to be taken out and we'll be, you know, Humpty Dumpty will be put back to, you know, our own separate component will be alive and well. We won't have to be part of this larger behemoth. I think that it's very disturbing to see this. DHS has had a history since it was formed of low employee morale. And frankly, I think that we have to look at new ways of improving this and making it better and making it work and operate better. It's disturbing.
Very disturbing from a security.
John Desenberg's most important federal news story of the week is from the Washington Post. The headline is Homeland Security's morale is at code red, and you can read it and all of our countdown stories at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. The most important federal news story of the week, as selected by Dan Blair, is next to wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Enzymatic Therapy and Nordic Naturals.
My advice to you, until they upgrade the system, simply turn off PhotoStream on your iPhone the next time you're in Vegas, and then it doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Or else, change your Vegas behavior, or else, don't take pictures while you're in Vegas. So now, once you've deleted all the photos in the PhotoStream, you've got to then go to the camera roll and delete those individuals.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Inova Fairfax Hospital for Children is Northern Virginia's only children's hospital, providing extra special care for our region's littlest patients. Each day, they help premature babies thrive, cure the tiniest of hearts, and beat childhood cancers. Help Inova heal our region's children. Join the Inova Fairfax Hospital for Children at the Star Kid 8K on April 22nd. Proceeds support Inova's pediatric heart programs. To learn more and register, go to inova.org/8K.
We're back on In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The most important federal news story of the week on this week's Federal News Countdown, as selected by Dan Blair, is unique as only you can do, because you cheated, actually. I let you get away with murder on this show, Blair.
I didn't cheat. I modified, but I never cheat.
In the third most important federal news story of the week, you chose the story about the Mega Millions lottery. And for your most important federal news story of the week, you actually chose two.
Well, now I have three. It's an updated one.
Okay. The stories that you chose, that you sent me yesterday, were actually, to be fair, two stories from GovExec National Journal, one about the Republican budget and how it affects federal employees, Paul Ryan's budget, and the other one, Chris Van Hollen's budget, responding to Congressman Ryan's budget and how it would affect federal employees. So what's your new entry here?
The new entry was, you know, after the fact that the House backs the pay freeze extension. And it really combines the two articles by saying that, you know, as part of the the House approved budget, we're continuing with the pay freeze extension. And I found it interesting reading about this and reading the comments. First, the administration's budget had a 0.5% pay increase. I mean, I didn't see a 0.5% as doing much of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's better than a 0.5% cut.
Yeah. Better than zero.
So, better than zero, and the House back zero. But what was also interesting was that the Democratic plan really didn't even back the administration plan, because it had nothing. It didn't include any provisions affecting pay or benefits, and the administration budget did have that increase in the retirement contribution for employees.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's, you know, employee benefits are part of the budget football. They're being that's being passed back and forth. I come at it from a little bit different perspective, of saying I understand this, that we were giving federal employees pay raises as in 2009 as the economy was tanking, and I understand why we did that, but at the same time it sent a message outside the Beltway and saying that we were immune from the effects and the problems that were going on in the
economy. Maybe worse, oblivious to what was going on.
Oblivious. And so now we're doing a pay freeze. What I'm concerned about is as Congress does this, and in some of the proposals it was a long-term pay freeze, you know, when the economy comes back and starting to pick up some steam now, what's going to happen in a year or two? We had a seminar today at the Academy in which we looked at the senior executive service and the issue regarding mobility of SESers. But one of the slides that we saw showed that I think it was two-thirds of the senior executive service are going to be eligible for retirement by 2015, three years from now. So if the economy's picked up, people are starting to retire, your better employees who are more mobile and more marketable are leaving, you know, we're behind the eight ball. I think we need to make sure that in this case, I would give agencies a little bit more flexibility to manage within a budget. We mandated 10% across the board. I'm concerned about flat across the board cuts because we may have agencies that are actually operating on slim margin. They're doing the job. They barely have enough resources. And if you cut those resources, it may lead to program failure. Other agencies may still have sufficient padding that a 10% cut won't make it. I think we need to give agency heads – actually, that's why we pay agency heads – to a little bit more discretion in doing that. I think at the bottom line is that we need to identify the government services that we need to provide and the most effective way of delivering them. And that could be part of the budget once the authorizing committees start along those lines. But I don't see that yet, and that's something that I would like to see come forward.
I know where you stand, John, on across-the-board budget cuts. I don't even have to ask as you cringe as Dan talks about them.
I mean, it's just such – it's the opposite of management. It's called lack of management when you have across-the-board cuts. Let me just give you, Francis – The phrase that I have banned from Performance Institute classes, workshops, seminars, and conferences, and that phrase is doing more with less.
Yay, because I hate that too.
Look, we're going to do less with less because that's the way the world works. We have to decide what we want to do and then budget accordingly and resource accordingly. That's the way it works. Doing more with less, and let me tell you something. Government management is partially at fault for this myth that we can do more with less because for years they put forward budgets and stuff that said, oh, it's okay. We'll absorb that cut. We'll absorb that cut. We'll find, some fat and absorb that cut. Well, you can't just keep doing that. And I think that Congress got the message that, geez, there must be a lot of fat out there. So in some ways, government leadership is at fault for sending this message.
Well, look at, what's interesting is if you look at this GAO report that came out for Dr. Coburn, I think it was last year. It's real interesting. They identified potential areas of overlap and duplication. And I emphasize potential because sometimes there's intentional overlap and duplication. You want some belts and suspenders. But the bottom line is we need to decide as a government what we want to do. And once we identify those core functions, then we need to identify how we're going to fund it. You know, sometimes some of the programs that we deliver on could be more efficiently delivered by another agency. You know, and we need to look at that. At the Academy, we're working with a group of fellows as well as some private sector folks in an effort. It's called Smart Lean Government. And it's a really good idea of saying what we're going to do. It bridges the gap between those who want to keep government doing what it's doing and those who want to cut because it's saying how can we continue to deliver these services in the most efficient manner and cut out the waste and duplication and overlap.